Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College presents Liberty Mail with the student fellows of Faith and Freedom.
Hello and welcome back to Liberty Mail. This is Aaron Jenks and we have a special episode today. We are here at Grove City College working for the Institute for Faith and Freedom. Our special episode today is a special interview with also student fellow Corey Kendig. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
And before we hop into kind of the qualifications of Corey and what he's been working on at Grove City, I want a quick shout out to our executive producer, Streeter. And Streeter's been down in Asbury College right now, and he's been kind of thrilled about the revival happening in Kentucky right now. And I wanted to just say a couple of things that we've been emailing back and forth this past weekend, and next week we'll have a little bit more information on it. But he sent me this email, and it sounded really cool. But he just told me, he said, there's a peace here on Asbury campus, which I don't think I have experienced. He said, clearly something bigger happening in God's kingdom. And so we'll have some incoming info on the Asbury kind of revival situation happening down in Kentucky right now next week, and that'll be a really interesting episode. But for today, Corey, again, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm thankful to be here.
Cool. And just a little info on Corey. Corey interned this past year on the Hill. That's what will be the discussion of today's topic. We'll be hitting on his experience on the Hill in D.C., and then also just the ins and out of D.C. But then also Corey is the YAF student president here at Grove City College, so Young American Foundation. He's also an executive member of AEI here at Grove City College. He is current political science major at Grove City College, and as I said before, a student fellow with the Institute for Faith and Freedom. Good resume you put together over the past couple years.
Thank you. Yeah, it's probably the proudest of IFF. It's great to be here. I mean, just really getting to work with you guys. It's always fun.
Yeah, I mean, and then for anyone listening at Grove City College, it's a great opportunity coming up. And then even this coming up in a couple weeks, we'll have information about how you can become a student fellow. And I think that helped you out probably in this past summer, like you said. You interned for PA's 11th district, so that's on the House of Representatives side.
Yeah.
And then can you just tell me about your position and what kind of the ins and out of your summer went?
Yeah, sure thing. So as a House intern, I really just spent a lot of my time dealing with constituent complaints, requests, everything in between. So I was communicating back with the district, which is nice because it's my home district. And I got to talk to a lot of people that, you know, I wouldn't normally get to talk to. As a House intern, your majority of your job is doing things for the office that, you know, may seem trivial, but they're always rewarding because you get to learn the ins and outs of the most basic grassroots part of the job. What I really started to do was write letters to constituents when they wrote to the office. And then, so like if a constituent complained about, say, a bill, the Respect for Marriage Act was a big one when I was there. Mm-hmm. When the Respect for Marriage Act came up, we got letters that poured in from either sides. And my job was to look through previous letters that we had written from the office and use key pieces of language that, you know, transferred to this bill and tried to write as close to the congressman's original voice as possible. And then I'd send it to my boss, who sends it to his boss when he's done checking it, and vice versa. Or not vice versa, continued.
Up the ladder.
Exactly, until it gets to the congressman, who gives his stamp of approval to it. So.
Pretty cool. Would you say the majority of those were handwritten?
No. We have a processing system that really allows us to, like, do these together. They archive letters. They keep constituent names, addresses, you know, so we can really keep better track of our constituents' needs.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it used to be where constituents could really just come up into the House building that you were working in?
So I worked in Cannon. There's also Rayburn, Longworth. Yeah.
So there used to be where constituents could really just schedule a time and come in, or with the even out of scheduling, could come in, check in. But I know there's been security issues, problems. And so now it's really you need to have an appointment with that office, and you can't really just stop in and surprise workers like yourself and have workers kind of just be working from their feet and working fast on their feet.
That changed around. I think we have a staffer, our scheduler. She was there well past the congressman's initial election campaign. She was there, I think, in the 90s. When she started, and she's just been, you know, a dutiful worker, great woman. But
a veteran, yeah.
That's yeah, cool. Yeah. She was there. She told us all about, like, the changes that 9/11 brought, you know, and just all this different things. I think 9/11 changed it, and then they got a little laxer in the late teens. But then in COVID, COVID really
changed. Yeah, I was
really
going to say, I know
it.
COVID really changed yeah. a lot. And then it's really cool how to see, I think from outside perspective, you don't see how often or how much resources that congressional offices pour in to working with constituents.
Yeah.
And that was basically, I will say, the majority of what you did, correct? And what yeah. there's a huge weight given in the office to this is an importance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really wanted to know what kind of inspired you or at least motivated you, pushed you towards the direction of I want to work on the Hill this summer, other than it being a really cool experience, I would say.
Yeah. So a quick brag. The office has just recently, before I left, hit, I think, over $1 million in funds given back and back taxes to the constituents, just because, like, that's what the office is there to do. It's not what their original intent was for, but it's hard to say that the founders imagined that when they created Congress. But that is a very unique thing that has developed in the House, and now they have services, social workers for each for everyone in the district. So that's just what a lot of Congress offices are willing to do for their constituents.
Okay, yeah, that's new to me. I didn't know that.
What got me started, what made me think about joining the Hill, I'd always thought about running a campaign or helping, like, work on a campaign.
Manage, yeah.
And I never really got the opportunity to do that, whether it be sports in high school or whether it be just something else, preparing for college my senior year because that was 2020. I never really got the chance to do that. But I really felt called to just do civil work in the government, and I've panned out a few internships panned out, and I just wasn't really feeling it there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of calls, but never really wanted anything. And then I think February of last year, I checked my email, and I ended up checking my junk mail for some reason, and here comes this email from the office, and I was so excited to get it. And I think that's when I realized that I really wanted to do it, just because, like, I had that excitement that some office wanted me back, and I was so excited. And yeah, I had an interview, really went well. Then I had my second interview, and that really went well, and they were really impressed that I got my internship in so early. And I'm not sure if there was a moment where I realized, like, yeah, I'm going to be a Hill staff or Hill turn, as we like to call it, but just it hit me when I got there on the job and I saw the rotunda the first day, and I was like, wow, this is what I was meant to be doing.
Yeah, it's pretty it's weighty.
Oh, yeah.
It's impressionable. And then can you walk, because I know there'll be people listening who kind of see themselves walking the same path mm-hmm. that you maybe were on. What did that interview process look like? Was it all on Zoom? Did you have to go to D.C., or is it as easy as a couple mm-hmm. emails back and forth?
Yeah, so all congressional offices, to my knowledge at least, I think this is true, but last summer is a long time ago, they have an intern position, whether, you know, it's filled, but they'll all have it for every single semester, I think, whether it be fall, summer, spring. What you really should do is, you know, if there's a congressman you want to speak to or want to intern for, you know, try to reach out to that office first thing. For me, my congressman was my home congressman. I had spoken to the office before, and so they knew who I was, probably not very well, but they knew, like, in their database they had my name, which always helps, because it shows interest and it shows communication. So you should go to that congressman's website, just type in, like, their name, and it should come up with their official government website.
Mm.
And then, you know, they look for their internship page, fill it out, but really just stress the desire for government service. When I interviewed, it was 2022. It was over Zoom because obviously I was in college. But what they're really looking for is, you know, what do you show passion, desire to do these things? Are you going to be a okay person to work with. That is probably the biggest thing I can stress. Like, work on yourself. You know, just try to be a nice person, an enjoyable person to work with, because these offices are small. They're not large, like in the Senate, because we all get the same amount of money, and it's not that much money. And, yeah, just try to be a nice person. Try to show a desire to learn, a desire to work, you know, to get better, to improve, because that's really what's going to set yourself apart from these other applicants. And apply early. It never hurts. You know, show that you're interested from the get-go. But yeah.
I would say, those things definitely apply on the Hill and definitely in congressional offices. Those are life lessons, like you're saying. Kind of going out of your way to make things done, and then also being a team player. I've learned that through athletics growing up. But then, yeah, it's so important when you get in past graduation and you get into these small, tight-knit communities, and they want to know, can I work with this person? Can Corey bring as much as we want him to the table? Can he be a team player, as I said? So when you guys were working on these issues, I know it's collaborative, and I know you were handling more constituent work, but what were some of the key issues or policy issues that you and your office were working on this past summer?
So, like I said, the Defense of Marriage Act, or the Respect for Marriage Act, as it's now titled, that bill was a really big one.
Okay.
Unfortunately, this summer there were a lot of mass shootings, so that issue, gun control, really came across our desk a lot. And my congressman was he's a NRA supporter, so that, you know, it's a lot of disgusting emails that come across your desk. So really having to respond to that in a respectful way is something that really came, those two issues, you got a lot of emotional people who really support those.
For sure, yeah.
And so those are always fun to get. Sometimes you just got to step away. But there were some on just random EPA protection things too. Mm-hmm. I think I got one for oil spills, and I think pelicans was a random bill that crossed my desk. Something about pelicans.
Peculiar, yeah. Because but energy production in PA is very, it's pretty huge. So that makes sense. But pelicans, interesting.
Pelicans is an odd one, but you just gotta respond to these and just see what's, what does the congressman stance look like on that, and then just try to figure out what best fits the mood of the letter that you got.
Yes, this kind of goes in my second question I had prepped for you, because it seems like there's a lot of competing interests. Like you said, there's a lot of not even from constituents mailing in letters or emailing letters about different topics and different political areas, but competing interests and demands from, like you said, like maybe the NRA or other lobbyist groups. Within the party, there's demands, and across the aisle, there are demands. How do you see that balance of interest, competing interest in the office play out, or even within congressman to congressman in the House?
So lobbyists aren't stupid. They want to get a congressman's vote, and they're not going to send I can't think of a left lobbyist group right now. Planned Parenthood is not going to send a lobbyist to the a Republican congressman that's pro-life. They're just not going to do it. That's a waste of their funds. That's a waste of their time. And it's going to be a waste of the congressman's time. So if a lobbyist group wants to speak to a congressman that they feel like they can swing to their side, they're going to try to set a staff or set an appointment with the scheduler. And during in session days, it's bustling. The halls are crowded in the Cannon office building. And so lobbyists will come in. I'd say that our staff probably had 3 to 4 meetings a day with lobbyists. So, you might not always get the congressman, but you will always get a listening ear who is definitely going to help you get a bill. It's not as much competing. I think maybe during the entire time I was on the Hill, I heard 2 different lobbyists who wanted completely separate things. But usually, you're going to try to find someone that supports your bill and convince them of their already preconceived notion of it. So, you know, just try to vie for that time is a little bit, but once you get a staffer, it's not that, or a scheduler, it's not that bad.
Gotcha. And then you caught my interest. You mentioned how busy the hallway was, or going from office to office. Mm-hmm. And it's often I've read, or it's been spoken about as like being on the Hill is working or being at a very busy university. Would you say that's pretty correct?
I would. So the January 6th trials were held right outside of my office. And I had so many people just setting up like right in front of the door of my – I was like, I can't get in.
I can't
like,
focus.
Please just let me into my office. Mm-hmm. And so it was always like big flashing cameras on the days that they were in session. And I mean – on the Hill in general, it's just a very like busy atmosphere. You got a bunch of people who are busy working and they're just focused. And so, you know, it's not uncommon to like turn a corner and almost run into someone because they're texting like 14 different people at a time trying to set up meetings and you're running through files of what, you know, you need to do before your next meeting. So it is a very busy lifestyle.
Gotcha, gotcha. And then how did you and your office stay up to date on policy issues or even what's happening currently in the news? Were there certain websites that you guys favored in an office? Like I know we were speaking earlier, you said a certain podcast that maybe y'all would listen to.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just found this helpful as an intern. I actually just got the chance to speak to him about Congress. His name's Kevin Kosar from the AEI. He's an AEI scholar on Congress. He has a podcast called – I'm sorry, it's something on Congress and I can't think of it.
We're live. Yeah. And he forgets to
I was actually listening to it on the way here, but Kevin Kosar on Congress, and that was something I listened to. It was really informative on like how the Hill works, like why it's necessary. But along the same lines, just news outlets that, you know, they're reliable. I had Real Clear, I had the Wall Street Journal, I had the Hill, all hotbarred to my computer, you know, just all, just trying to stay updated, trying to keep informed with the news. I think Bloomberg also floated across my desk a couple times, but you know, nothing too unreliable. Everything that like you want, you expect people to read, you know, those are the ones that you're gonna see. So anything that like, you know, like Vox never showed up when I was trying to read something important. But you know, these well-established good journalism.
Aaron, this is a benefit of having a director in the house. Thank you, Olivia. She said, "Understand Congress with Kevin Kosar."
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, it's a good podcast. Yeah, I only, you know, started listening to it a while ago, but it's really good. People should listen to it if you have any questions on like how Congress works.
Gotcha. That's cool. I know in my circles this past summer in DC, morning segments, there would be like an 8-minute not podcast but almost a news clippings that NPR would do in the morning, and then also the Daily Wire would do. So you listen to that on the subway or the metro coming into work, and that's kind of an easy way to get your news fix.
Someone from the Senate side, I met with them, you know, just to discuss like what the Senate was like. He's a chief of staff over there. Legislative director. Very close, actually, their workings. A legislative director in the Senate, fun fact, is equivalent to like a chief of staff in the House, just how they work. But he told me that like, you know, one of the greatest pieces of advice he could give is like just find something that you enjoy listening to that is educational on your way to work, because sometimes, you know, like those commutes are terrible. They're just horrible. And finding something to like better yourself as a, you know, worker, and something that takes your mind off the monotony of everyday commute is
Yeah, that commute can be crowded, shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
Maybe a bad smell happens and it's rough. So yeah, it's nice having headphones, or at least just traveling with people that you know and have conversation in the morning. I want to get to some of the stuff that you wanted to talk about. Would you want to talk? I'll let you have kind of free range with what you want to go into next. We have we have some time left, so it's good.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of people that I met on the Hill. That Senate staffer that I talked about, he came and presented to a group of my roommates and just gave us a presentation on what it's like to work in the Senate. There's a lot of people that work in the House and Senate a lot of different types of people, but they all fit into some category. You have, like, I think just five different people. You have the policy workers, you have the ladder climbers, you have the networkers, the state loyalists, and the true believers. And some of those can sound like they have a negative connotation to them, but they're really all just good type of work. I mean, there's good and bad people in every single one of them. Policy wonks, these guys, they just know something really well, whether that be a policy issue, whether that be just proceedings in one of the houses. That's really what they're into. For example, I think I was told that Mitt Romney's ledge director was a master in understanding the Senate filibuster. Like, that was what he had devoted himself to and what he was really keen on. So, like, if something, you know, violated the rules of the Senate, he was just on it like that. The ladder climbers, that one sounds a bit like, you know, like people just want to move on, get higher up. But there is a lot of merit to it. In my time in D.C., I met a guy who worked as – he was the youngest ledge director on the Hill at the time.
Really cool. You know how old he was?
I think he was like 28. Okay. So, you know, you're pretty young when you – you're not terribly old in the grand scheme of things, but you're still like 28 is really young. He may have been 27, but he was 28 when I met him. And what that really entails is getting to know people, working hard, being, you know, educated, just one of these things. You can't be like all of them. You know, everyone's going to beat you in one thing. But if you show dedication in all aspects and like a proficiency in one that you can control, because I guarantee that someone has one of them, you know.
Before you move on real quick, can you tell me where you kind of built this, or maybe was that from that meeting, that the one?
This is from, I would say, this list is comprised of probably 30 years of knowledge on the Hill from different people, you know, just trying to gather knowledge on just what I noticed. So this has been vetted by multiple people. This isn't just one guy that I found one time who I just believed because I was an intern and believed anything. This has been vetted by probably 30 years of experience.
Gotcha. Yeah, keep on going.
But then there's the networkers. The networkers are the guys that know everybody. I had one of these guys in my office. He loved sports, went out and met everybody. He was dating someone from another office, and, you know, just like this mentality of, I'm going to get to know everyone so that when it comes time, I'm going to, like, not cash in favors, but I'm going to be able to, like, talk to people and have an in.
There's the university lifestyle for
you. Oh, yeah, exactly. Just knock on the next person's dorm. Hi, I'm Corey. Nice to meet you. And then you have the state loyalists. This is the guy from Idaho who introduced me to this list. He knows people from Idaho. He's not himself from Idaho. But in his office, he's got like seven people. And he's in the Senate, so their office is bigger. And seven people in an office doesn't sound big, but to the House, it's pretty big. Seven people from Idaho. Like, that's because their congressman worked in Idaho. So they really know Idaho policy. You know, like, I feel bad because potatoes is all I really know about Idaho. But
no, but it seems pretty straightforward. Yeah,
they know, like, farm ag stuff, like,
yeah, whatever's the most important to their districts.
Exactly. And then the last one's true believers. True believers are, you know, they believe in the congressman that they support. Not to say that other staffers don't, but it's they want to be the person that changes things. They want to be in there because they feel a sense of service to it. And all of these, you know, different people, different purposes to serving, but, you know, good and bad people. But
and then it seems like there would be a contrast between those who are true believers and maybe ideas or fundamental ideas within politics, and then, like you said, following a congressman who they do believe in also.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, not everyone in office is going to be not everyone in office is going to stay in that office, but my boss, he had been there since he had interned there, and he had the opportunity to move up in other offices, but he didn't want to. He wanted to stay with my congressman, and I think there's a great nobility to that there's a great nobleness to that loyalty.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up. That was really very interesting and kind of a good experience for myself, I'd say, because this coming up summer, I'll be working in D.C., yet to know. But and then yourself, can we just say what your future plans are this upcoming summer?
Not too sure yet. I have a couple internships that are, you know, I've applied to, I've gotten interviewed for. So
is
we'll
it looking
see.
Like the D.C. area at all, or is it spread out?
D.C. or home, home okay. in Lancaster. One of those two, it's where I'm planning on being. So not anywhere outside of that, though. So D.C. or in Pennsylvania, one of the two.
Well, cool. And yeah. I'll keep in touch with you. And maybe we'll give an update later in the semester.
Sounds good.
But for everyone listening, I hope this was helpful. If you see yourself on a path like Corey, or just interesting to understand kind of the inner works of an office, if you're listening at home, thanks for tuning in to Liberty Mail. And please like and subscribe down below. And again, if you have any comments or questions, leave it below and we'll try to get back to you next week. Thanks for coming in today, y'all.
For more information on the Institute for Faith and Freedom, visit faithandfreedom.com.